The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hey Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Trojan fans, welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. Happy President's Day to everyone. We're going to talk about some USC Trojan football like we always do here on the Peristyle Podcast. We've got the coach, Harvey Hyde, joining us today. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Harvey Hyde or go to his website, harveyhyde.com, for all of his content. We're going to talk about the Pac-12, what's going on with that, USC and UCLA, just over a year from now, are scheduled to leave for the Big Ten. Some superlatives of going into spring football, what coach would like to see as far as improvements go on this USC football team heading into spring football, and a lot of other stuff we want to get to. If you have any questions or comments for the show, podcast at uscfootball.com is our email address. We love to get your emails. You can also call or text us at 424-254-9141. That's the number. If you have the Apple Podcasting app or wherever you listen to your podcast, follow us there, subscribe. If you can, leave us a five-star rating and review. It does help to grow the show. And we want to talk to the coach right now. Coach, how you doing, sir?
Ryan, I'm doing pretty good. It's a holiday for everybody but us, yeah. I guess, unless there are people out there working like us, and I'm sure there's a lot of them. But a lot of people took that extra day today, and we don't, because football never goes away, so we love talking about it.
We do love talking about it, and it's a 365-day-a-year thing. I know it's President's Day, so happy President's Day to everyone. Hopefully you went out there and bought a new couch on sale or whatever you're doing, having a barbecue. I think we got some pretty good weather here in Southern California. It's going to get worse later in the week, but good to see. Hopefully get some good weather out there, and maybe you're listening to the podcast, walking through the park, whatever you're doing. Enjoy your President's Day. So a bunch of stuff we wanted to get to. Coach, and you know, one of the things, and you had mentioned this off the air before we go into some of the other stuff, is this is a USC team that won 11 games, obviously lost their last two, close to making the playoffs, you know, close to winning a Pac-12 championship in Lincoln Riley's first year. The coaching staff is staying exactly the same, and they are adding players from the transfer portal, players from the high school ranks, trying to get this roster better. But I wanted to get your thoughts initially on where you think this team really needs to improve on heading into spring football. I know you had some areas of concern and how you'd prioritize those. If you could only fix a couple of things, where would you kind of put your fixing dollars, I guess you could say, for this USC football team?
Well, I think as a head football coach, you sit down and you look at your football program and you look at the areas where you were successful and the areas that you got by with. In the areas you really need a lot of improvement with, and what did you win and lose with, and what did you get better at during the season, and what maybe didn't you really achieve on one side of the football, or what cost you football games, and the way to turn it around, because everybody's getting better, and if you don't get better at the same time, they're going to catch up with you. So you got to look at your season, and you got to look at the different events, like the offensive side actually was a were very successful, and successful because of one guy that won the Heisman Trophy. Not that others weren't great players, but it all starts with the quarterback, and you had a magic man there that made it happen. So you look at that, and you say the magic man is back. So that might be my less priority as far as getting better in the spring, because we're going to be good. We've got great players returning. We picked up some offensive linemen. We got to find out who can play and not play. We've got some pretty good running backs, so we should be able to develop them. We've got to put together an offense there that will take advantage of our skilled players and our running backs and the whole package, and that's something you can accomplish. And as a head football coach, I'm going to look and I'm going to say I'm going to have to get a little bit more involved or more involved in the defensive side of the football, because we didn't get better on defense during the season. We performed, we won because of turnovers, which are created by defense, but you can't always rely on turnovers. They're not always going to happen in abundance during a football game. And you've got to be able to stop people and do certain things without depending on turnovers. Not that you're not going to try to have turnovers. So you look at the defensive side and you say, we've got a lot to do there. That would be my number one priority going into spring practice. How do we make the defense better? You've got to make sure that you evaluate the personnel properly, that what you brought in, what you have, and what you need to do. Who can get better that you already have returning? Can that athlete become a better football player, or has that athlete already matured and he's at his maximum ability because of his size, his speed, the length of his arms, and all of the above? And then, of course, the new players coming in, you must evaluate them, and you've got to find out, is Corey Foreman going to be a player or not going to be a player, and all these other new, like Eric Gentry's having surgery, so he won't be out there in the spring, so who's going to be there in his position that we can evaluate and get things done on the front seven? Because the front seven is where it all starts. If you can't win in the front seven as far as pressure, tackling, forcing people into bad situations, causing mistakes, then you're in trouble. And then on the back end, you've got to evaluate who's going to be in the secondary, who's going to make that play for you in the secondary. And if you don't have the personnel there now, then you better find some. Or if you need to, even move offensive players over there to make sure your best players are on the field. So I think that's the main topic as far as if I'm Coach Lincoln Riley, is we did not really play to the level of a championship level, and it cost us games on the defensive side of the football. Now, the next thing I would address is special teams. How do we get better? I mean, we were not good in kickoff coverages. How can we not be good in kickoff coverages? Kickoff returns, we made silly errors, judgment errors throughout the season, and also a error in the Cotton Bowl that cost us maybe the football game. So how do we improve special teams? How do we improve our field goal percentage? How do we return our kickoff returns? Mainly, how do we improve our mental errors that we don't beat ourselves with special teams? And who does the players look to? Who does the players look to as far as being their special teams leader? So I think that's very important that you look at it, your special teams. Offense would be something I would depend on and know it's going to be good. But those are the areas that we've got to improve on if we're going to be a contender, because other schools are better. Washington's better. Oregon's better. Arizona State's going to be better. Arizona's better. So, you know, these other teams are trying to catch up with you. So if you're going to stay ahead of them, you've got to get better.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, Coach. I mean, it's the Pac-12 is going to be very top-heavy again, improved teams. This is this is not a time to sit on your laurels. You got to get better and push forward. So I think Lincoln Riley's going to be trying to do that. I like your list of priorities of where you would kind of put your resources going in the spring, and we'll see what USC ends up doing. We don't have the official spring schedule yet. We know it's supposed to start pretty soon, March 4th on Saturday. Met with some people at USC, and the Dave Emmerich, who works in the athletic department, put out a spring schedule, but I guess that was not necessarily correct. It's probably something similar to that. But we should know pretty soon, maybe this week, what the actual spring schedule is. From what I've heard, it won't be open practices, similar to what we saw before, that media would be able to watch like the first 30 minutes or so and get to talk to players and coaches. So probably very similar to what we've seen before from what I've been told, but we don't have the official word yet. But stay tuned to that. We'll have our spring coverage and everything going forward. You know, same kind of thing, three practices a week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and we usually hear from Lincoln Riley at least two of those days. So also wanted to talk, Coach, about the future of the Pac-12. And USC and UCLA are leaving July 2024. And I know some people are like, good riddance, whatever. I mean, but it's still, it's kind of like you got another job, but you live in the same neighborhood. So you might get a better job somewhere and you're commuting, your commute's a little longer, but you're still coming back to the neighborhood every time when you go, you know, when you come home from the weekend, you go to sleep. USC and UCLA are still going to be West Coast schools. And I think it matters what happens to the other West Coast schools going forward. And I think George Kliavkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12, was very bullish about the kind of television, you know, TV rights deal that they could get for the remaining Pac, you know, the Pac-10, the 10 schools that were left. And there's been some rumors of like the San Diego States or SMUs of the world being added to that, you know, tier one rights, where they're going to go. ESPN seems to be like the main partner, but Amazon, Apple, you know, streaming services can be involved. There's a lot of options on the table, but the longer this goes on and there's more rumors and stuff we're hearing out there about why this has taken so long, that they're not able to get the kind of money that Kliavkov was promising to the schools. You know, he was thinking like 40, 45 million a school. It just doesn't seem like that's going to be there. And then the Big 12 comes in and Brett Yormark sort of jumps the line and signs their deal first for, I think it was 31 million a year, which seemed kind of low, but the Pac-12 might not even be able to get to that number. And, you know, if that happens, will there be a grant of rights deal for the Pac-10 teams that are left that they'll sign and say, hey, we're going to stick together? Or are they going to start looking elsewhere? So the longer this goes on, Coach, to me, there's more and more instability. And that could mean something significant for USC and UCLA if there is a fracture in the Pac-10, which I didn't think was going to happen before. Now that's coming into question a little bit more. You know, if Oregon or Washington end up in the Big Ten, that could impact USC's recruiting going forward, where instead of leaving like a rival like Oregon behind, they could continue to come into Southern California and poach away some of the top talent like they've been doing if they're part of the Big Ten, as opposed to get, you know, relegated to the Mountain West or something. I don't know. I mean, we don't know the whole future there, but there does seem to be a little bit more instability in the Pac-12, and USC and UCLA signed their deals. They're moving forward, but they're still here, Coach. So I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts. I know it's a long little preamble there, but your thoughts on the Pac-12 future, where that's going, and, you know, what it could mean for USC's and UCLA's, depending on what happens out here.
Well, it is a difficult situation, and it was caused way back when Larry Scar was in charge and allowed a lot of these things to happen, but the college presidents allowed it to happen at the same time, and no one really understood what was going on and why, but it was happening. And the face of the Pac-12 was lost as far as with USC and Southern California. And other schools took advantage of that as far as, you know, building their programs and so on, while USC was going through its struggles with sanctions and so on, and not winning at the level it should be. So the money opportunities and the stations, the affiliates, were not picking up their games. They were playing at 9 in the morning, 11 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon. Not 1, but some morning games, which weren't attractive to people. And it started to hurt the revenues and the advertising. People said, no, people aren't going to be watching football at that time. So USC and UCLA made the determination of leaving. And at the same time, I still believe that if Washington and Oregon are given a big opportunity to go to the Big 12 or the Big 10, I think they're gone, personally. And I think until there's a new commissioner for the Big Ten, there's not going to be much done as far as making sure these things happen. But I think George K's got to continue with the Pac-12, his position, and assume and try to keep it together the best they can without really knowing what the final group will be. But I think it's so important to them, if they're going to have any type of revenue income, they've got to have some members of the Pac-12 that are southern, farther southern than Berkeley and Stanford. The entire state and the population of the state, as far as, what is it, San Diego is the eighth largest city in the United States. And all the way from where, San Jose or Palo Alto, all the way down Berkeley to San Diego's no Pac-12 members, including L.A., with UCLA gone and USC gone. So they've got to fill that area. So I think they don't have any option but to pick up a San Diego State. Now, the only problem is now San Diego State has had good success against the Pac-12 in playing them. Obviously, they beat Utah and they beat other teams, Arizona. So it's not like they can't compete. But when they built their stadium that they just recently completed, it's a 40,000-seat stadium, which is bigger than Washington State's, don't get me wrong. So I think that San Diego State, with the improvement of more funds for the Pac-12, would be a good addition to the Pac-12 as far as for television revenue. And I think that it would pick up on their attendance, too, because they would be picking up teams that would never played in San Diego regularly. So I think it would help them. Now, what happens in between that area? Well, the only thing in between that would be a Fresno State, as far as in California, because all the state colleges, such as, well, there's no more football, except if you're a Division III school from Berkeley to San Diego, if that happens. So what happens? You're either forced to pick up Fresno State, which really supports college football, all their athletic programs. They've proven that in playing the Pac-12 teams and the other teams they play, so they can be very competitive. But does that pick up the dollars for them as far as media, as far as people wanting to advertise nationally and so on, as far as how many numbers are there actually in Fresno they're going to pick up? So you look at the UNLV, which is a fastly growing community and has all the Pac-12 activities going on now there, and has a program that has not really won in football and basketball recently at the level of what the Pac-12 would like, but gives them the other side of what's happening in Las Vegas with all of their championship games being played there in the central location of UNLV. Would that happen? I don't know. SMU gives them a whole new area, but is that an attractive game or team for the Pac-12 people? Will the people come out because SMU is coming to town? I'm not quite sure if that'll happen. So you've got to, these things you have to consider as far as picking the teams that'll be a part of the Pac-12. But it's a dangerous situation coming up because Washington and Oregon are not for sure. Who are you going to pick up in these other areas? So I think the Pac-12 is really in jeopardy of exactly what's going to happen, depending on what happens with Washington and Oregon to see if they're going to survive.
Yeah, this. I mean, there's a lot there, Coach. And I think, you know, if there are some interesting follows on Twitter that I've been, the people that seem to kind of know what they're talking about, and they'll go on these like Twitter rants. And there was rumors of a potential Big 12, Pac-12 merger, or something that was at least being discussed. A lot of the stuff, though, that we're hearing just from behind the scenes, you know, I know Dennis Stodds reported some stuff. Guys over at The Athletic have been reporting, you know, some of the stuff that it's just, you know, ESPN and Amazon seem to be the main players right now, but not all schools are on board. They're looking at adding those programs like you talked about, and not all schools are on board for that. It just doesn't seem to be like everyone's on the same page. And, you know, I think you got the Cals and the Stanfords that are like, we don't want San Diego State in our conference. And then, you know, why are you adding schools like that? If it's, you know, it seems like it's more inventory more than anything else. And, you know, would an Amazon want more schools, or do they want more games, or do they only want like the game of the week? And, you know, they've dipped their toe into the NFL, and the ratings for those numbers, I mean, for those games are not good. And that's only one game. These would be games going up against other games, and you have to switch to a streaming service as opposed to watching like ESPN or Fox. So there seems to be a lot going on here. And I don't know where your thoughts on, I like George Kliavkoff, and I think, you know, he was dealt a pretty bad hand, but man, from the jump, it just seemed like he's not been, you know, he was putting some tough spots for sure, but allowing the Big 12 to go to market before you I think that was really something that hurt the conference. Did you need to do something to keep USC and UCLA? Yeah. And maybe you couldn't have done anything. I don't know. The Big 12 had an advantage because their two programs got poached first. Texas and Oklahoma were gone. They had the first opportunity to get the best group of five schools. So they've already scooped up the best replacement schools that you could get. So that kind of put the Pac-12 at a disadvantage. The Pac-12's advantage was they were going to negotiate their deal first. I think not seeing that the Big 12 would jump ahead of that and probably leaving some money on the table to become more stable has destabilized the Pac-12. So it's just so interesting for me right now. And maybe USC fans don't care as much just because they're not involved. But like I said, this is part of West Coast football. This might be, if something happens to the Pac-12 and they fracture, if the Arizona schools want to leave or Oregon and Washington want to leave, I think the Pac-12 will be dead. I mean, I just don't see them surviving something like that. And then who knows how that changes college football going forward. It seems to be going more and more towards like two super conferences. But who knows? Maybe the Pac-12 and the Big 12 get together and they form their own super conference. There's just a lot that could happen in the college football landscape, Coach. It's all interesting to me. I don't know if it is to you, but it is to me.
It's interesting, yet it's satisfying as far as for USC and UCLA. I think it's the greatest thing that could happen to them currently with all this going on. They're going to have a big payday. I think it's going to bring great interest to college football in Southern California and the Rose Bowl, the Granddaddy of them all, and the Coliseum, historical places to play. I think people that are in the Big Ten area look forward to coming to Southern California or having the opportunity of playing in the Coliseum against USC, visit Southern California during winter months, go to the Rose Bowl, something kids really want to. Always had the opportunity of playing in the Rose Bowl, but a Northwestern or Minnesota hadn't been there for a long period of time, and it's a great excuse to go to California. I think the crowds will increase, the interest will increase, the revenue will increase as far as attendance at games. And I personally don't think USC or UCLA cares what happens to the Pac-12. I think that they made their decision to leave, and I think that USC, they turned a back on USC when they had all the sanctions going on. The other universities, they didn't come to their support, as to say. And I think that USC made the decision, and UCLA followed along because of the revenues and also the exposure and having the opportunity of being in the Big Ten and knowing this is all going to happen. Thought it was a great move. So if you're an SC fan or UCLA fan, I think it's great. I didn't like it at first because I thought it broke up a very traditional conference. But again, I can see what's going on. There was some schools that really wanted to get after it. And there were some schools that didn't really want to get after it. But the schools out there that are now improved, you take a Utah, who's the newest member, like in the Pac-12, and you take a Colorado, they're going to be much better. And you take, of course, Washington State is a team that you better show up with because they'll beat you. And Stanford's made a coaching change. Arizona State is a premier team. So I think there's still a core of good football for the Pac-12, especially if Washington and Oregon stay. I think it's a good conference. It really is a good conference, but can they compete with the other conferences, with the lack of revenue that the other conferences are going to have? That's the question, and how are they going to fill the void in the areas where they don't have football programs? As far as for media relations, it's pretty hard to set a contract for television when you say we don't have anybody south of Berkeley or Palo Alto in the whole state of California. That's pretty tough. So I think they've got to really make some serious plans on what they're going to do there as far as being able to maybe move games to other areas, play a game, Washington play a game in L.A., Washington play a game in San Diego. I don't know what the future is going to be, but they got to make some real adjustments.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll get to our other topics and a couple questions. So back in a minute.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle podcast. Also want to talk about this whole name, image, and likeness thing, Coach. And last week was kind of interesting because there were two different USC NIL entities that kind of kicked off, had events. And basically what we're talking about is, you know, the world of collectives. And if you guys remember hearing the term Boulevard or the name Boulevard, they were out there like as a, they were calling themselves a collective plus. There was a bunch of people, some people that used to work at USC. There were some boosters behind it. They're trying to raise money. They were selling t-shirts. Well, we haven't seen them very active on social media since the end of last year. And then we started getting word that Boulevard was no more, and they're retooling it and coming up with a new name and all that. So Boulevard, as we know it, from what we've been told, is no longer going to exist. So that kind of leaves a void since they were like the sort of official USC collective partner. I know the NCAA changed some rules, so you couldn't do that. And there was a lot of criticism and a lot of stuff going on in that whole world. But they are, from what we've been told, they're coming up with a new name and a new model going forward to try to help USC's NIL the players and get them some NIL opportunities. So we'll see kind of what happens with that. But from what I've been told, they're not ready to kind of announce anything yet. But in the meantime, there were two other groups that did. There's one called the Tommy Group, and I was at their event in West Hollywood on Wednesday night. Some former players like Keyshawn Johnson and Alex Holmes and some big businessmen that are USC boosters that were there. And that was a crazy event. The whole football team was there, Coach. Like Lincoln Riley, the whole staff, all the team. Players had like business cards. They were networking. And we weren't, as a media, we weren't allowed into the beginning part of it. So we didn't get to see some of the presentations, but we were there for the mingling and stuff afterwards and got to talk to a bunch of the founders of this. And they seemed gung-ho, ready to go. To try to help, get some of these big brands in Los Angeles associated with USC football players. And that's what their focus is. And there's also the Let's Engage company, which if you remember Jake Olson, the former USC long snapper who happens to be blind. And, they have a company that Let's Engage, and they had an event in Manhattan Beach. They got some boosters backing them up. Jake Olson was actually one of the original name, image, and likeness guys. He was making money, doing speaking tours and things. Even though he was a college football athlete, the NCAA, the joke was the NCAA wasn't going to, shut down a blind cancer survivor from making money. But he was doing the NIL stuff early. And so I think they feel that they're well positioned to kind of help represent some of these athletes and help set them up with NIL deals and things like that. At least three groups, two that are formed and one that's forming or reforming to try to help this USC NIL space. None of them, and I know a lot of USC fans are into this, Coach, none of them are focused on high school recruits. They're not trying to get high school players money to sign with USC. I know that happens out there. USC, from all the groups I've talked to, none of the groups I've talked to have focused on this. And I've talked to all of them. I've talked to all the groups, including Student Body Right that isn't around anymore. But yeah, so they're out there. It'll be interesting to see how this kind of progresses going forward. But USC's general strategy, Coach, is more take advantage of LA, the entertainment capital of the world, gets these players associated with some big brands, get them compensation for being on the team and doing things that in that way, instead of hey, let's pay some high school players to end up at USC. So, but yeah, so just kind of be on the lookout for that. You might have seen some, you know, articles about the Tommy Group or Engage or any of that going forward. But it's definitely changing, and it has an impact on USC recruiting for sure, and retention, getting players to stick around the program, because if they have some good deals and, you know, maybe they don't look elsewhere, maybe they don't want to transfer, maybe they don't want to retire, whatever it is. But that's sort of like a little recap of what I saw this past week, Coach. Any thoughts on any of that?
Well, I've always said in life, adjust or die. So you've got to adjust to what's going on in college football and what's happening to the world and everything else. And if this is a big part of what football is going to, or athletes are going to, as far as when I look at Caleb Williams, I think he's going to have his line of clothing here shortly. I mean, as far as the way he dresses and the things he's doing and his gloves and his hat and all these things, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he has a line of clothing. He's got a plan. He's an organizer. He's always been that way. And whatever it takes to get that done, along with, you know, playing football, I think that's going to happen. And I think it's not going to be for everybody. I think it's going to be for the highly visible athlete that people recognize on the television screen, or recognize on the billboard, or recognize by the voice. I think that's the ones that will benefit the most. I think it will not help just the entire team being there or coaches being there, but I think it will help the ones that will help the product. And the ones that will help the product, they will have some type of agreement with that product. It's just like anything else in business. If you help sell a car, or if you help with a drink or whatever it is, they're gonna sign you, because it proves that more people do that by recognizing who's drinking this product, or who's wearing that clothes, or who's driving that car. So I think it's going to really assist the high visible athlete, but maybe not the rest of everybody.
Yeah, and then from talking to some of the founders, Coach, they do want to try to set it up so there'd be team-wide deals. I know they had one that was like scooters, so everyone got a scooter, kind of things like that. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do. And then I know two of the new organizations, Engage, they're working as a nonprofit on this. And then whatever the new Boulevard's going to be, same sort of thing. They're going for like the nonprofit status. And that's what Student Body Right was trying to do as well. So some different approaches. We'll see how it all kind of works out. But it's I would say, you know, in general, USC's behind, as they kind of normally are in situations like this. A little bit behind on what's going on. But I just want to kind of give you guys a feel for what was that. I wrote a lot of information in the War Room on Friday, if you want to go check that out over at uscfootball.com. Coach, there's also been some potential rule changes kicked around the NCAA. I forget, one of the committees or something, I think they were meeting and had a few rule changes. I think Ross Dellinger from SI was posting these, what these changes could potentially be, all for trying to, you know, take down, you know, have fewer plays in the game and have the games take a little less time overall. Because some of these games are going like 4 hours, and they're trying to reduce time. So I want to go over the changes, or the proposed changes that are under consideration, and get your thoughts on all of them. So one of them would be prohibiting consecutive timeouts, so you couldn't ice kickers, so you can't call timeout two or three times in a row. No untimed downs at the end of the first quarter or the third quarter. I don't think that would have that much of an impact. Clocks would run after first downs. So right now the clock stops after a first down until you reset the ball. So they would keep running even if you get a first down, except if it was the last 2 minutes of the half. And then a clock would run on an incompletion once the ball was spotted. So it'd be very similar to what they do on a first down right now. So if you throw an incomplete pass, they bring the ball back and spot it, and the clock starts again. You don't just get to have the clock stop, just like a mini timeout. But any thoughts on all of those? I'm not huge fans, but I don't know if you are, Coach. I wanted to get your thoughts on some of these.
Well, I think a lot of those follow the NFL, as far as those are a lot of the NFL rules that are going on, as far as the clock continues on a first down and starts, you know, after a, I don't know if it starts after a penalty, but whatever. And all this does is allow the less play on the football field and more commercial time. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know if it'll shorten the game, because I'm sure the time sent, let's say it's they save 3 minutes, well, that's six commercials. I mean, are they going to cut the commercials down? Has anybody talked about cutting the commercials back? Because I like to watch a football game. I like to see as many plays as possible. So it depends on exactly what's happening with the rules and regulations regarding the number of timeouts, the number of commercial spots you can have during a game. Are you working with television, the networks, to say, we'll cut back if you cut back? If we cut back on football, are you cutting back on commercial times? So if you're not cutting back, but maybe you're picking up commercial times, what have you accomplished, really? The game will be the same length of time. And that's my first thought as far as hearing what you just said. But again, I'd have to look at it more.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's some of this stuff is like, okay, well, are you really going to accomplish what you wanted to accomplish? Like sometimes we have a goal, and we're going to do these things to try to reach our goal. And then you get unintended consequences and you can make things worse. I don't want to see the, you know, I like it when the clock stops on an incomplete pass. I mean, that's the way the NFL does it. I mean, you can kill the clock. Like, I think that's a little extreme. Getting rid of the, you know, stops on a first down except for the last 2 minutes, I think, you know, that's kind of a reasonable compromise. The one thing they probably won't compromise is fewer commercials, Coach, because all these huge TV contracts they have to do, they need those commercials to pay them off. So I'm curious to see. I mean, these are just kind of proposed changes, but I just want to kind of get your thoughts going into that one.
Well, they're sort of taking a lot of this thing out of the game as far as calling double timeouts for a field goal or so on to sort of ice somebody. I don't know. Yeah, you can take it or don't take it. I didn't like the 2-point conversion at first, okay? Now I sort of like it. So I think it takes time to adjust to what you're so used to seeing. And a lot of times, unless we speak about a lot of these things, you don't even think about, hey, wait a minute, the clock's running. Well, yeah, the clock's running because of the change of the rule. And once you hear about it, then again, yeah, your whole offense changes as far as getting huddled up or getting on the line of scrimmage to run your next play. So I don't know. I think a lot of time is on a kickoff. You line up for a kickoff, you kick the ball in the end zone, and then now you walk the ball out. It's a fair catch, and the ball goes to the designated 25-yard line, and they take a commercial.
Yeah.
Really, they run play, and they go to a commercial break. I mean, that is, to me, what I don't like, okay, those type of things.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to someone at Fox about that, and they basically have a number of commercial breaks that have to happen during, you know, each quarter. And so if they've just had not a lot of breaks in the action, then what happens is that's why they have to kind of squeeze an extra one in, and that's why they end up doing that. So if there was a bunch of breaks before, they shouldn't have to do that. But yeah, but we'll see kind of going forward. We got a couple questions as well, Coach. Let me play a voicemail for you.
Hey, Ryan. A little thought before spring ball. If you told Ronnie Lott, a Hall of Fame football player, maybe the best USC has ever had on defense for sure, if you told him to try to strip the ball on every tackle, since he's just tackling with one arm, no matter how fantastic a player he is, he's going to miss some tackles. That's our philosophy. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Well, you know, I have to agree with what Curtis is saying. You're emphasizing one thing before you're emphasizing the tackle and the stopping the receiver, ball carrier, whatever, as far as falling forward. You're trying to do the secondary thing, which is strip the football rather than put a hit on him and knock him backwards and put him to the ground. I think that's something that is part of the thing, but I think the tackling portion of it comes first. And I think that sometimes there's too much of an emphasis on that. I think by hard hitting and good tackling, you're going to cause turnovers. And yes, you do occasionally strip the football, but is that the way you should be taught to make a tackle? No. I think it's the best way is get the guy to the ground, and if you get him to the ground properly, you're going to get a turnover or a fumble or get an interception or whatever it is. But, I agree with Curtis on that. I think you got to get the guy to the ground first.
Yeah, that's probably going to be a point of emphasis like you're talking about this spring. We'll see, how much we get to watch. But where you're securing the tackle, that's a big deal. And there were some bad games where USC was poorly tackling. And then when you get when it's also a team that gets a lot of turnovers, then you kind of like start questioning, are you only going after turnovers? You're not trying to tackle the guy, things like that. Our buddy Dan, class of 1962, wrote in. He says, as Coach Hyde always stresses, recruiting is the name of the game so that good coaches can develop great players. What is your take on the money that is now shown in recruiting? When a player leaves a program like Florida for ASU because he didn't get the promised millions of dollars in the NIL deal, you know it's about the money. He said, kind of get your thoughts on that. He kind of goes on a little bit about it. I want to get into some of the specifics he's talking about, but thoughts on, I know USC is not focused on this, but the fact that there is actual, proposed money involved for high school players in the recruiting process now.
Yeah, and that'll be used because of people that do have the finances and who believe and are boosters or whatever to a program, whatever that program might be. Well, they'll tell that kid or that family that we're going to set you up if your son or daughter signs with our university, and so on and so on. But is there going to be a guarantee that that son or daughter is going to stay there 4 years? To me, we've seen, and I don't want to get into who they are, that a kid will set out his senior year in high school because he's been receiving money because he doesn't want to get injured to go to the school that's going to give him $1 million. So, you've got to look at just exactly how that money is going to be used. And then that student athlete, if you know what I'm talking about, left that school and went to another school. Now, did he pay that money back? Did they give him the money? How did that work? So, I think that you're always going to have people out there to try to buy people because money is there and people listen, because I can understand how someone who doesn't have much in their life or a place to sleep or take care of his children or her children or the family, and someone is offering them $500,000 to sign to go to a university, how they can't say no to that. I can understand that, because it's a whole different lifestyle change for them. So can I say it's good or bad? I don't know. I think it's bad because all schools can't do that, and everything isn't equal. And the NCAA in the past has been, everything's going to be equal. Well, everything isn't equal anymore. And I think people have to just recognize that. And if somebody's getting $1 million or $13 million, supposedly the player was going to get at Florida, I think that's a little blown out of part, blown out of place, and he didn't get it, so he left. So, you got to look at it on both sides and say, oh, well, this is the way it's going to be, so what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, it's a little crazy what's going on out there, and we'll see. I mean, I think the market will start to correct itself, but Dan, thanks for that. He also said it's time for Reggie Bush to get his Heisman back, and he said, it's so quaint now that in the 1950s, John Arnett and other football players were penalized half the season for selling their complimentary football tickets that cost about $10 each. Losing 5 games, in my estimation, cost John Arnett the 1956 Heisman Award. He was the Reggie Bush of his era. Yes, this has been going on a while, Coach.
I remember all those years. I mean, Marv Grew, he was in charge of that at USC, and they've changed so many things. If you remember, the NCAA put in that the USC football players couldn't work in Hollywood, couldn't work on the movie sets because they had an unfair advantage that other universities didn't have that opportunity to be in an ad or work on the sets or do the different things that LA offered those players. So they, you know, they had some great producers at USC in the movie business that hired these kids. And they said they couldn't do that. I remember when I was in Las Vegas, I'd recruit, and when the kids arrived in Las Vegas, I'd have a limo pick them up. Well, the word got around that I was having my recruits get picked up in a limo, and a lot of the universities complained because they didn't have the limo services we do in Las Vegas to pick up their kids. So I got a letter from the NCAA saying, cease what you're doing with limos. Well, today that'd be nothing. But in those days, that was something.
Yeah, crazy how times change, but they do. All right, Coach. Well, good stuff. A lot of interesting topics to discuss today, and looking forward to spring football starting here pretty soon. So it'll be fun to be able to talk about the team and see what we, you know, whatever we can see out there. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. But Coach, again, thanks a lot for coming on, and take care, man. It was good talking to you again.
Thanks, Ryan. Listen, let me ask you one question because I don't know the answer.
Sure.
Maybe you do. I don't think you do. But what time have they spoken about practicing in the spring? Do you hear anything?
They have not said, but a little bird told me it's probably going to be an afternoon practice. Similar to what we saw before, like a Tuesday, Thursday afternoon, and then a Saturday morning. I don't think the Saturday mornings are going to be open, but I think we will still be able to hear from Lincoln Riley. That's what I've heard, but we don't know yet. They haven't, you know, finalized it or announced it or anything. But I believe you're going to have some afternoon practices like we had before during the week.
Okay, good. And spring, the spring game is going to be on April the 15th, and we hope that'll be open to the public.
Yeah, it should be open to the public just like it was before, from what I've been told. So again, I think they'll probably announce something this week, Coach. They need to come up with the roster. They haven't done that yet. So I put up my scholarship distribution chart, and you can kind of see where I feel like USC is scholarship wise, but we'll hear more hopefully this week, more official word on the practices, what, you know, how open they will be and all that kind of stuff.
All right, my man. Well, I appreciate coming on. Thank you, all of you out there, for being a part of our show. And Ryan, I look forward to the next one we do.
Sounds good, Coach. It's always great talking to you and talking to all of our listeners out there in the Peristyle podcast land. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9/8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.